Welcome to the EcoNews Report, produced in collaboration with KHSU and the North Coast Environmental Center. We are your hosts, Kirk Cahoon
and David Narum
of Greenway Partners.
Kirk and I have been exploring over the past year the issues related to innovation and the environment, and we've brought several speakers and guests in to talk about what they do locally in the North Coast region to think creatively about how we can address some of our environmental issues. As we've talked in the past, innovation often comes from bringing competing or what's been called a conceptual collision. Ideas that maybe haven't been thought of before in tandem, or simply looking at things differently. How can we do what we need to do as a society and as an economy in ways that are cleaner and greener? Today, we have Kathy Moxon with us.
Yeah, and Kathy is director of the Redwood Coast Rural Action, RCRA, and for over 30 years, she has been involved in economic development efforts throughout our region. She was founder of the Institute of the North Coast and president of the board of the Redwood Forest Foundation. Thank you for joining us, Kathy.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Kathy, could you tell us a little bit about your experiences here in Humboldt County, just your life story in general?
My life story. I'm sure that's what you want to hear is my life story. But what I will say is that I've sort of been around the economy and in and out of the economy for 30 years. Like you said, that's a little scary to hear that number come out of somebody else's mouth. But one of the things that I've really seen over time is we went from a dominant economy of a couple huge industries that could make us or break us in any individual year to a much more diversified economy across many smaller industry clusters that are pretty varied with a lot of different products. And that's been sort of a fun thing to see over time, that evolution of our economy.
Yeah, and you mentioned clusters there, and as many people in our listening audience may be aware, the clusters approach is one that the county has taken as its central focus of its economic development policy. Can you kind of give us an outline of what that actually looks like?
Sure. Very traditionally, an industry cluster is a set of businesses who are all related by markets and workforce and raw materials. And I think timber, fishing, dairy, those we can all see and feel that they go get wood out of the forest, they mill up that wood into timber, the trucks take the timber to markets, and in between there are a lot of office products purchased and machine shops working on the mill, and so that there is a really broad group of jobs associated with that. There are other emerging industry clusters, ones that may not be so evident or may not be so robust or may not have all those pieces but are still important in our region. One of the ones that is probably the biggest job creator right now is called diversified healthcare.
What is that exactly?
We don't really think about healthcare until we need it, probably a good thing. But it really is an interweaving of businesses that all have to do with health, whether it's the hospital, whether it's your doctor's office, the pharmacies, potential equipment manufacturers for that industry cluster, chiropractors and massage therapists and herbal dealers, and anybody who is really in the market of health and well-being is captured in this what's called an industry cluster of diversified healthcare. And from an economic standpoint, why you think about it that way is that a lot of times those industry clusters need something from the public sector in order to become more robust or take advantage of an opportunity. Many times that's around workforce development, training, specific skill training. And when a public entity can provide that one thing that a lot of different businesses can use, you really leapfrog that industry cluster and its ability to grow and develop in an economy. So it seems like it's most cost effective for us to think about what are these big groups of businesses, what are their opportunities for growth, and then how can the public sector give those little helps that really help launch those industries?
Could you provide an example of the workforce training?
Sure. Actually, there's one on the cusp that we're working on right now. You're talking innovation, and here's an innovation. People have probably heard that Open Door Health Clinics is building a new clinic in Eureka. And the old clinic buildings, the existing clinic buildings on Booner, we're then going to work on converting that to a training clinic where workforce levels from housekeeping and receptionist and billing and nurses assistants and nurses and physicians assistants can all get on the job training in a real clinic setting. That's very different than what happens right now, where you go to school, you may not ever get training in a setting, and then you come into a busy office where there's lots going on and you really need to immerse yourself quickly. That's a really bumpy way to bring workforce in. This will give workforce an opportunity to get some on-the-job training before they actually get into a full working setting.
Right.
So that's an example of tweaking the workforce training just a little bit to get a better, more educated, and more ready workforce into the diversified healthcare industry cluster.
I want to point out, I was just thinking about the root of, you know, this is the ECO news report, and the root of economy and eco, ecology are the same word, oikos, for household, sort of, and I think in some sense, economy is about the management of the household. But there's also been, related to the environment, some training for green jobs. Isn't that right?
There has. There's the traditional green job training that has been happening at College of the Redwoods, having to do a solar installation and water management systems and wastewater management systems and that sort of thing. But another one that is on the verge of innovation that maybe we could talk about is it has to do with the timber industry.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, the timber industry has always created biomass, or the what's left over after you cut timber. And a lot of that is at the mill setting. So once you cut all the boards, everything else that's left, the bark and the chips and the pieces of wood you don't use, become what's called a waste product. And if you're really eco-groovy, you'll always find ways to use your waste products.
Well, in fact, a lot of the innovation in the timber industry and starting in the 70s was automation and then reusing smaller and smaller pieces of wood to create glulam beams or particle board or things like that, because dimensional lumber was harder and harder to find as we liquidated larger and larger forests.
And we were on the cutting edge of a lot of that technology leaps forward because we were the center of the timber industry in this region.
Right. Yeah, and so I think the biomass, as you're describing it, what does this look like? Are we talking about taking the thinnings left over after a forest, getting ready for preventing a fire from coming through a forest? Are we talking about the stuff that just comes in on a truck from the mill? Or what exactly are we thinking here?
You know, when we're trying to deal with an industry as a whole, we have to think of all those sources. And let's just go over the ones you just said. The mills that we have create waste products that if they don't get rid of those waste products, they will bury the mill. I mean, there is lots of wood product that comes out of a mill and just starts to pile up.
Right.
Another place is in the forest. When they cut a tree down, they take all the limbs off the tree. Those have historically been burned.
Yeah.
We now want to be more eco-groovy with that. So let's not burn it. Let's find another way to treat it. So we have what's called slash in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a big push right now because the cities are creeping out into the forest, there is a big push to reduce the on-the-ground small trees and bushes in the forest in order to prevent catastrophic forest fires. Mm-hmm. It really helps when you manage a forest to when a forest fire comes through, it'll stay on the ground and not burn as hot and really not kill the trees. It'll go through the bottom. But we've left so many of our forests unmanaged that right now there's so much wood, it is so dangerous. So that's another source of biomass or wood product that is being brought out of the woods that we need to think about how we might use it wisely.
Well, and I think there's a phrase in there, that using it wisely, that obviously will trigger certain memories for environmentalists listening to the show, wise use, which is kind of a scary term for a lot of environmentalists. But the devil is in the details, as they say. And how do we know, as an environmentally interested group, if we look at what's going on in the forest historically, the forests have not been treated all that well. And if we talk about creating a demand for new sources of what we're calling waste now, how do we know the forests are not going to be mistreated in this process? Can you think of any ways that we can think more sustainably as we develop this new industry?
Well, one of the things that we've learned over time that any gathering from nature taken to the utmost could devastate nature. So one of the things that we are thinking about as we move forward are what are the parameters around which we build to this biomass that might be coming out of the forest that might set those, what's a healthy amount to take out of the forest, and how do we make sure somebody's doing that? And you see certifications of all kinds out there. We would anticipate that this would be part of a certification process. Mm-hmm. Already, and there are sustainable forest management certification processes.
Kathy, we're not necessarily talking, at least in the early stages of utilizing biomass, of expanding harvest necessarily. Isn't there a lot of existing quote-unquote waste available?
Well, I think that one of the things people need to understand is because there is presently no way to make money using biomass, what we're trying to do is mitigate the cost of either reducing the fire hazard or getting rid of it at the mill. And so if we can break even, we will be happy. So there's no reason to make more of it. If we just use what we have and break even, that would be helpful. There hasn't been a technology that allows us to really find a way at the present time to actually make money with biomass to any extent that would mean that we would go into the forest and harvest trees just to satisfy this biomass.
So that's actually probably a good thing when you're looking at it. But what are the ways that you would use biomass for energy production or carbon sequestration? What would be some of the ways that it would be used?
Well, there's a couple of things that we are thinking about here. And please remember that a lot of these technologies are brand new. Historically, we have moved all of our chips to either be burned at the power generation plants we have here.
Or in the teepee burners.
Yeah. Oh, or the teepee burners. Yeah. Remember those?
Going back even farther, yeah.
Or to the pulp mill, when there were pulp mills here. Mm-hmm. And that also had its fallout, you might say.
Yes, you might.
If you ever had a car with a paint job, or not.
Ash on the car every morning, yeah.
Exactly. So we've always had a place to send those, but those places do not exist anymore. So there's a couple innovations happening around utilization of biomass that we are thinking about. One is biochar.
What is that?
There's a methodology of burning it under a controlled circumstance so that you're controlling emissions and controlling the temperature and controlling the time at which you burn it. And you're actually coming out with charcoal. And the biochar that we're specifically looking at right now is a soil amendment. It actually helps soil hold moisture. And it also locks carbon, so carbon is not released into the atmosphere. Carbon sequestration, you've heard that, locking that carbon up in the soil. So the biochar that we at Redwood Forest Foundation are currently experimenting with, the process actually creates this rough charcoal that then gets reincorporated into soil as a soil amendment.
Okay.
There's another process I should talk about because I know that Schatz Energy Lab up at Humboldt State University is working on, and that's called torrefaction.
That is a very nice word.
Torrefaction.
It's another process of burning wood under very controlled circumstances and under very controlled temperatures, and it creates pellet that then could be reburned. And these new pellets that come out actually are hotter fuel than coal. They could be used instead of coal in coal plants. It could be used in our plants. With some changes and innovations to that product, we might even be able to burn that same product in our home stoves. Right now, it burns too hot. You probably melt your stove down. But
wow.
But you could see that if we could use what's now a waste product to create a much cleaner source of fuel for some of our larger power plants, we could actually connect that circle back to a renewable fuel source. And so it's pretty exciting to think about torrefaction and actually creating a valuable fuel out of what is now waste here.
Kathy, have you seen the unit that they're experimenting with at the Schatz Lab?
I have. I would say it's not mobile like hook it on the back of your car. Mobile.
Put it in your trunk.
What they call it is semi-mobile, which means it takes time and energy to set it up. So in a centralized location is smart, but it can be moved from one centralized location to another.
That's okay. A funny way to say it. I mean, anything is basically semi-mobile if it takes time and energy to move it and set it up. But I digress. Go ahead.
Well, come on. I would not take a mill in Corbell and move it.
Well, that's
true. I think it's semi-mobile. That's,
okay. Well, I think that with the biomass, too, and the stuff you're talking about, the wood waste in the forest, the transport to like a central facility is a large cost. So the ability to be mobile with your energy conversion device is, I think, would be, you know, very economical.
Definitely handling and transportation are the biggest costs in utilization of biomass. And so the closer you can get to the source, the less cost you have in those two. And I would say the other thing is that people in our region are very cognizant of trying to get technology that is fitting to the size of our region. So building a huge plant and then having it suck biomass from long distances are really not part of what we see as a good vision for our region. So having these smaller units that can go closer to the source is really probably how it's going to be. And they do load up on low-boy trailers and can travel around,
okay,
which is pretty exciting.
All right. Well, you're listening to the Eco News Report. Our guest today, I should say, is Kathy Moxon, the director of the Redwood Coast Rural Action. And Kathy, let's just jump back into that topic again. It seems that any big capital investment, as you mentioned, in a large centralized facility requires a lot of stationary policy. So things have to be set in mind, you know, long-term, so people can borrow money, so people know that the regulations aren't going to change. And innovation in the environment is so dependent upon really quick ability to navigate things that are changing rapidly. And this seems like an opportunity if you're able to take a problem right now, quote unquote, a waste problem, and make a semi-mobile processing facility to convert this into a product. That seems like a really big opportunity economically for this region.
I definitely agree, particularly when you look at the geography of our region,
right,
and you're looking at timber being important in Del Norte. York County and Trinity County and Siskiyou County and Mendocino County and in Humboldt County. But maybe the place where you get better economies is that you have smaller scale processing facilities close to the raw materials, and then you do a common marketing process for the product that's coming out. So there are places to band together and places to get scale that's more appropriate to the location. And I think we'll look at both.
Okay. And you are involved in, it's the Regional Working Group on Biomass. And who is involved in this regional biomass effort?
Well, we have groups from Siskiyou County, from Trinity County, from Del Norte County, Mendocino County, and Humboldt County. All those places are thinking about biomass and what to do with it and whether they can create an economic use for it. And it's taking a different form in each county. For instance, Trinity County, they have mostly public land, so they're really talking about a relationship with a public forest, a state or national forest, in order to get their wood product. It's fire safety is what they're talking about. And they're talking about creating small-scale boilers to heat public buildings, so schools, courthouses, hospitals, and that is their approach. They're looking for innovation in boilers in order to use their biomass in local boilers.
That's interesting.
Very different than what we're thinking about here.
Yeah.
Kathy, I have a question about how, of course, as you know, when you have an innovation, there's a confusion. Oftentimes people will think if they have a good idea, that's an innovative idea, that it's an innovation. But as you know, an innovation is really not an innovation until it's in the market. It's being used. It's providing value.
Otherwise, it's just an idea.
Otherwise, it's just an idea. And how many of us have
we
sat
have
on our
ideas.
Couch and had that million-dollar idea that never gets enacted? And you have experience, I know, with funding and investing in businesses and people. And so, you know, to get an idea into innovation status, to get it into the market, what are some of the things we can do here? Maybe even with the biochar or the torrefaction device as an example.
Well, I think that there's a couple things. One is that you need to do your homework. And there are a couple different places you end up looking for funding to get your homework done. Is it going to work here? Is it going to produce the product we think it's going to produce? Is there really a market for the product? So that upfront work needs to be done. And sometimes that's the hardest part to fund at a scale that really proves your idea to be useful in the marketplace. One of the things we find is teaming up. And that's one of the reasons why this regional group is together. Each individual county doesn't have much power to find capital in order to explore options, but together we find that we can be a lot bigger presence in a financing market to get funding to do some of this experimental work, and we're jointly writing grant applications to do this. The other thing is just to get attention from financiers who will finance the production of whatever it is, your widget that you created. And I think that that's one of the hardest things that we have in our region, is trying to find the capital to actually get into production, and that's a very difficult hurdle. We are lucky here in that we have the Headwaters Fund, and we have some relationships with angels who are individuals who like to support innovative projects, and sometimes people get it done there.
And just so we're not too frou-frou here, you're talking angel investors. And
I am.
Okay.
I
thought I'd clarify
no
in case somebody walked in late and thought we were on a different channel here.
Yeah, I would say financing is the number one challenge here.
Okay, and let's talk for briefly about that, because with every project, a good idea that's going to be implemented needs capital, and money is so hard to find now. Where would a carbon trading market enter into this conversation about biomass? If there's suddenly a price for sequestering carbon, as there is now, but it's very diffuse and not very well designed, and it doesn't seem like prospects are all that high for that being a very strong market for quite a while, but at some point that could switch and really change the valuations on a lot of forest land in our region. What do you think about that?
Well, you could be right.
I could
There's
be
no
wrong.
No doubt about that. I cannot see, unless there's large amounts of lumber coming from somewhere else, that our lumber will not maintain its importance.
That lumber will not.
As a product. Lumber itself.
Yeah. Okay.
And from lumber, there is a certain level of waste that happens. Certain level of biomass. I could see that standing timber, particularly the conifer species we have here, could very well become valuable in the carbon sequestration equation. I mean, when you think about a redwood tree, they sequester so much carbon. But the carbon market really needs to get pretty sophisticated in order for it to top the value it is in timber at the present time.
Well, and there's the other issue that always comes to mind when I think about the carbon market, which is additionality. How much of the sequestered carbon would have been sequestered anyways? So is there something that you're doing by protecting a forest? Like, would the forest have been cut down if you didn't use carbon credits to buy and protect that forest? And that is a nice segue to the Redwood Forest Foundation. And a lot of folks are familiar with this project, but it's so interesting and such a great model. Can you kind of describe for us what exactly we're talking about? This is in USL in Mendocino County?
Sure. Okay. Sure. So Redwood Forest Foundation really was created out of the timber war in the 1990s, and people in Mendocino County felt surely there was a better way than the environmentalists and the timber industry fighting against each other. And what they saw in the aftermath of the timber wars was the divesting of the large corporations in timber in Mendocino County. Large tracts were being sold off. And the community had this brilliant idea that if the community group could buy it, then they could change the management of that land to something that people could agree on, and that the profitability of that forest after its recovery from being so heavily harvested from the big corporate management style, that the profitability could actually be reinvested in community. And so Redwood Forest Foundation was created in Mendocino County to own and manage forests for the benefit of the community.
And it's a nonprofit organization, but it's a large acreage. It's close to...
It is a nonprofit organization, and we own just barely under 50,000 acres. We owned a little bit more than 50,000 acres, and we recently sold a little over 900 acres to save the Redwoods Lake because it was coastal access. And then we just put a conservation easement on it that will guarantee that into perpetuity there will be a reduction of the harvest level, and the management will always meet certification called FSC, Forest Stewardship Council certification. We talked about sustainable certifications.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an independent certification process that we're in the process of going through on this forest called USL. It actually borders Humboldt County.
Okay. And it's interesting. This seems, from the outside, it seems that this is maybe a good model for like a community forest, similar to what Arcata Community Forest is doing.
It is just another model of ownership for a community forest.
Okay. And so I wonder if you can kind of touch briefly on the burgeoning movement to get a county open space and community forest area around Eureka.
Right. There's a couple of things I think about when I think of that. One is that there is a lot of great green space in Eureka now, and a lot of the land in and around Eureka is prime redwood growing land.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get an urban interface, when you get that city sort of creeping out into the forest, there's an interface between that and the industrial managed forest a little farther out into the hills that there needs to be a lighter touch forestry, and there needs to be a mixed use. So when you get this, people encroaching, they're doing recreation, they're hiking on it, they're biking on it, they're jogging on it. Having public ownership in a situation like that makes a lot of sense because they are better able to manage that public access piece. By actually doing some management for timber production on that same property, which is very good timber growing land, they can actually pay to manage it as a public use park through that timber management. So what we're seeing is at that interface where houses and forests meet, creating a border of publicly owned forest land makes a lot of sense, both to those communities and to the governmental entity. And right now, there's one being proposed in the what's called the McKay Tract between Myrtle Avenue and the Ridgewood area.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy, there's a field of design called regenerative design, which sort of has this basic principle that solutions grow from place, and you know that context is really important. And it strikes me, listening to a lot of the things you're saying, you know, Kirk and I have, you know, tried to develop this theme of innovation, that innovation is not merely technology, but it occurs in finance, how you finance projects. It occurs in the management and ownership structures that you have in place. And it really is, it's very contextual. You know, maybe we use the wood for boilers in our schools. Maybe, you know, and we involve the community in sort of this creative place-based problem solving. Even the youth, I think, have a lot of great ideas and to put into the mix. So what other types of innovations how would you respond to that, I guess?
A couple ways. One of the things that came to mind was that the county is going to go through, we call it the Ryan Creek Project, because it's the land that is on the west side of Ryan Creek, which runs all the way out to Humboldt Bay, right there in that green space where Myrtle Avenue and the Myrtle Town ends.
Mm-hmm.
the county is going to start going through a large public process to find out what the public would like to happen there. So there is an opportunity for the public to weigh in and really be thinking about how that property could best be used to benefit communities in many different ways, not just recreation and timber production, but education is a great way to think about how do we get the schools out there and use it to teach kids about the environment and about forestry and about wildlife. So there are lots of opportunities there. The other thing is, when Redwood Forest Foundation first started, we knew that there needed to be a new financing mechanism to help communities find the money to buy forests. And for almost 10 years, we have been working on a new type of bond called a community forestry bond, which would be tax exempt and allow the private sector to actually buy bonds that allowed communities to purchase community forest properties.
That is innovative.
It sort of got quagmired in the last administration, the Bush administration, just because no tax bills were really moving, and it really needed a clarification from the IRS that you could cut the trees on the property to pay the bond back, which is technical, but... So again, it's been reintroduced. It's probably in committee right now talking about this community forestry bond, but it would actually provide long-term, we were originally proposing 40-year, tax-exempt bonds to help communities purchase forest land.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
That'd be a game changer.
It would. It would, because mobilizing the private sector to help with the funding mechanisms is the way to go. We've done almost all the public sector financing we can do.
Yeah, it seems like it. Well, in this era of austerity and nobody wants to spend money on anything related to the environment or public resources, protecting a forest so people can go hike and bike doesn't seem like a big priority.
Exactly. But I will say that timber lands have really held their value in light of the ups and downs of the financial markets right now.
Mm-hmm.
Industrial timberland is holding its value as a revenue-generating source. So that's a good thing. That's a positive thing for this possible new bond issue.
Kathy, one thing we sort of touched on, I guess, as obliquely is the role of the private sector from the sort of the entrepreneurial perspective. And I mean, it seems like a lot of times innovations get enacted, get executed, the ideas get turned into innovations because of somebody who has taken it upon themselves as an entrepreneur to create a product and a market. What kind of efforts do you see locally to further that?
I thought it was interesting when you started that, when you separated private sector from entrepreneurs. Because when we think about the private sector, I guess we usually jump in our minds to established businesses or established institutions, which are businesses in and of themselves. Many of those started out by entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's a maturity question.
Right.
I think that here in Humboldt County, we understand the importance of having what we call a pipeline, that the next mature businesses are right now in their little seedling states of ideas parked in entrepreneurs.
And I know we're doing a lot more locally now with the youth as well, youth entrepreneurship. And HSU has a sustainable entrepreneurship program that they've begun.
It's happening in a lot of different places in order to build this pipeline of businesses. We are actually known nationally for the level at which we're starting new businesses, which should not be underestimated, the importance of that robust, innovative, creative group of people we have here in starting businesses. And we're thinking about all kinds of things now. This is the time, prosperity, which is our economic development strategy, which we didn't really talk about it, except that it focuses on industry clusters and building local businesses to be the nucleus of our economy. We're going back out to renew prosperity and relook at our economic development strategy and re-engage people in the conversation about our economy of the future. And there is no doubt that people are still very focused on entrepreneurs and how do we build an atmosphere that accepts failure as well as success. That's an interesting part of entrepreneurship.
That is. Well, it's a necessary part.
Yeah, we're looking for mentor programs and education program for kids, and we have some business plan contests. We have some high-risk capital pools to help fund those groups along. Starting right after the first of the year, people will begin to hear more about economic development planning, and that's a great time to weigh in about how do we support the next generation of businesses and business people who are nurturing ideas and innovations right now and might be our next Moonstone Mountaineering or Yakima Rax or Haliyashi or Fire and Light Glass.
Well,
when it's so ironic that now we're in this process of renegotiating our recycling contracts where we might be sending our glass out of the area.
Yeah.
So everything comes full circle.
Yeah, we've come full circle today as well.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Kathy.
It's been a pleasure.
Great.
Hopefully we can do it again.
All right, we can.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks a lot.
Great. Take care.
Bye-bye. This has been the EcoNews Report. I've been your host, Kirk Cahoon, here with
David Narum
of Greenway Partners. We were speaking today with Kathy Moxon. Kathy is the director of Redwood Coast Rural Action, and for over 30 years, she has been involved in regional economic development efforts. If you have any questions about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU and KHSR for the EcoNews Report.